Now, talking about the smoke leads us right into our first discussion about the fires that produce that smoke. From the geographical center of our listening area by the state line, there are fires burning in pretty much every direction. The number one priority for the entire country at the moment is the Chetco Gap Fire, burning in and beyond the Rogue River Siskiyou National Forest, upriver from Brookings on the Oregon coast. I keep calling it Chetco Gap. It's Chetco Bar Fire, burning in the Rogue River Siskiyou National Forest. That is the major concern, but far from the only concern. Let us check in now on some of the larger fires and fire complexes. We have from the High Cascades Complex, Virginia, and I'm sorry I didn't catch your last name. Would you tell us who you are, please?
This is Virginia Gibbons with Chetco Bar Complex.
Okay, Virginia Gibbons, good to talk to you. And so tell us about what's going on at Chetco Bar today. It is the number one priority in the country now, is that right?
That's correct, it is. We're at approximately 98,000 acres. We have about 800 people assigned to the fire. We're at zero containment. Some good news in just currently is that we do have some cooler weather and pretty significant tick up in our relative humidities, which is assisting the firefighting efforts. That was in place yesterday, and we'll have that same kind of weather today. And as we look forward to Thursday evening, Friday, and Saturday, we're going to have a big change in the weather with the Chetco effect coming into effect, and that's a similar weather pattern that we had when the fire grew considerably early on.
That is such a regional oddity. Can you go a little further on what the Chetco effect is and how it has caused so many problems for you with the Chetco Bar Fire?
Well, some people liken it to like the Santa Ana winds. It has that much influence, and if you've got any fires out on the landscape that have a lot of heat in them, when those winds, which dry the fuels and then also fuel the fire, really significantly increase the fire activity. And so it's always a very marked event. Doesn't happen all the time. Generally happens in this area about 3 to 5 times during a fire season. And with this next predicted round, that'll be number 3, I believe, of how many times we've had the Chetco effect this fire season.
And how fast, how brisk do the fires, do the winds get?
It really depends. I think they can, that's a good question. I don't know exactly. All I know is that they do significantly feed the fire, and we can expect a lot of growth in the fire during those times.
All right. So I know I took a vacation and left the state for about 10 days. And when I left, the Chetco Bar Fire was kind of a creeper in the wilderness. So is the Chetco effect largely responsible for what made it blow up so big?
Yes, it's partly responsible. Another rare event that we had was that sustained period of heat where we had record temperatures for about a week. And that really also contributes to what we're seeing happening today, that in combination with the wind. So pretty rare event in combination.
And what kind of spotting have you had ahead of the fire? I know that tends to be a problem when the winds do get brisk, is that they'll blow embers from the main body of the fire downwind. And has that happened a long way downwind from this fire?
Yes, it has. We've had spotting up to a mile ahead of the fire.
Okay, so what has been the situation with evacuations? I understand some people were allowed back into their homes and set back to a level 2, and if you think 1, 2, 3, ready, set, go, so they were at go and now are back at set.
That's correct. In the Carpenterville area up to the Pistol River, we did allow residents starting yesterday to go back in. However, we've also cautioned them that they need to be ready at a moment's notice should that change.
Okay, we have another guest on the line with us now from one of the other fire complexes. I have Mike for first name. I don't have a last name. Can you tell us your last name and which complex you're with?
Sure. This is Mike Lindberry from the High Cascades Complex.
All right. How are you doing today?
Well, we're doing pretty well. We are in the middle of a transition to another incident management team. Our fires are pretty much holding their ground with the exception of the Blanket Creek fire, which has grown about 800 acres in the last 2 days.
800 acres from how many originally?
We were right around 5,889, so we were just over 5,000 acres about 2 days ago.
All right, and what has been happening with the Spruce Lake Fire? This is the one that is the closest to Crater Lake itself, is that right?
Sure, yeah. The Spruce Lake fire is actually burning mostly in the interior. Really no threat to the lake or any other areas right now. It's just over 5,000 acres at 5,360, 61% contained. The area that it's currently burning in is just very broken fuel bed, and what we're seeing is just a lot of smokes in the interior of the burn, meaning, you know, not threatening the line. And then around the line, we'll get occasional spotting to areas where we have fuel. We do have a lot of rock and boundaries and barriers between those areas of fuel. So there really hasn't been any significant movement on the only open piece of line on the Spruce Lake fire.
All right, so we got Spruce Lake, Blanket Creek, and as I see Silent Butte, Broken Lookout, Round Top, Needle, Sherwood, and Tom and Jerry all in that High Cascades complex.
Yeah, we have we had a maximum of 17 fires in this. Really, most of the fires, the majority of the fires, are 100% contained now. The I'll just run through our priorities right now,
okay.
And that's the Sherwood fire that we're working on currently. That one is 71 acres and 80% contained. Actually, I heard this morning in briefing, good news is that they have line all around it. They expect to be mopping it up over the next couple of days and cleaning that up. And then we're going to be working over toward the Broken Lookout fire and the Lookout 2 fire. Those fires are west of Union Creek up in an area called Windy Gap up on the ridge there. And
did you say Windy Gap?
In that area. There's also a Windy Gap fire on the Falcon complex, but as of this point, we don't have the Falcon complex information. That fire is our next priority, and we're putting together a plan for that one. Actually, a plan is together. It's just a matter of when we can shift our resources over there and start working on that one. And then, always these things are very dynamic, priority shift. And with the movement of the Blanket Creek fire, I'm sure that was the third priority. To this point, obviously, that could change. I think the biggest piece of news now is just below the national park boundary, about a half a mile on the Wainema National Forest, the Blanket Creek fire has now bumped up against the Pacific Crest Trail.
So I'm guessing there are trail closures then.
Yeah, there have been trail closures throughout the Crater Lake National Park boundary. This may bring another closure, within the forest. This is just something that just happened last night. So we have just begun the process of determining the action necessary.
We are talking to Mike Lindberry at the High Cascades Fire Complex. Virginia Gibbons with the Chetco Bar Fire is with us as well. And we bring in now Rich, I don't have your last name, from the North Umpqua Complex. Good morning, and tell us what's up with you. Oops, and we lost him again. Okay, so let me go back to Virginia Gibbons, and let's talk about the situation with the number one priority in the country. What does that do for the firefighting effort at Chetco Bar?
Well, as you can imagine, it greatly enhances our ability to get resources. So we do have a tremendous amount of firefighting equipment, fire engines, and personnel that are here to help the community. They are doing a lot of work while we've got this nice little window of opportunity to prepare structure protection, to assess the structures that are out there, to put dozer and handline where we can, so that we can make our stand when we get this weather change.
So do I understand it right? There are 8,000 firefighters, which would more than double the population of Brookings.
No, we had approximately 800.
Ah.
Yeah.
That's a bit of a difference. Okay. And how are they deployed? I understand in the very early stages of this fire, as it started in a wilderness area with a lightning strike on July 12th or so, that it was really hard to get to, just to be able to assess where you could make a stand against it.
Absolutely. If you can imagine, our repellers, who are our firefighters that drop out of perfectly good helicopters, two fires, coming into the Kalmiopsis wilderness, extremely rough and rugged country. So when they did respond to that fire, it was about a quarter acre in size. They were dropped from the helicopter from not too far away, and yet that extremely rough country made it very difficult, and the fire quickly grew and became beyond their ability to stop.
Is the fire still growing to the east, Virginia? I mean, you mentioned a 0% containment, but I would think a lot of that area has been burned already.
Yeah, it's much slower progress over there, as you might imagine, from the Biscuit Scar. It's wanting to primarily push right now to the west and the southwest, particularly with the Chetco effect. But it is, you know, growing in all directions, if you will. But the primary push is west-southwest.
All right. And so there have been three homes lost so far, or three structures? I want to make sure we're clear on what kinds of structures were lost.
You know, we're still in process of finalizing that information. I know there were several that have been lost. I'm not sure what are residences. But we do have several that have been lost, unfortunately.
But there are no evacuations above level 2 at this point, so it sounds like nothing in imminent danger at the moment.
There are still evacuations in place at level 3.
Okay.
That was just one area, the westernmost swath, that we backed off to a level 2 evacuation. But there's still a very large area in a go evacuation status in effect.
And about how many people affected by that evacuation?
There was over 3,000.
Over 3,000. Okay, that is a significant chunk of the Curry County population, one of the least populous counties in Oregon. Mike Lindberry, tell us about that. We mentioned the trails. Talk about some of the other facilities up at Crater Lake and the impacts on those. I mean, obviously, some of the roads were closed for a time on the West Rim Drive.
Well, yeah, what I would like to start off with, as far as Crater Lake National Park, the park is open. Initially, in the beginning stages, actually the first couple of weeks of this fire, we did have some West Rim Drive closures. The roads completely around Crater Lake are now open. There are still some trail closures. We were recently able to open the Watchman Trail, which was good news for the lake. They've had a lot of visitors up there. People are coming and taking a look. They're getting to see the lake, and from certain vantage points, they're actually able to see some of the smoke of the Spruce Lake fire when conditions are good for that. One thing I would recommend is we've had a lot of smoky conditions lately, and that if they have the capacity, they take a look at the Crater Lake webcam before they head up to the park, because we have some issues with smoke in the area, and anybody that has lung problems or any health issues should definitely reconsider if they come up. Other than that, the trail closures are all listed, and I don't have each closure in front of me, but I can let the listeners know that NCWEB, INCIWEB, if you put that in a Google search, that is a comprehensive source of information for this fire. It has all of our closures in it, and it has links to the webcam and to the park as well.
INCIWEB has proved to be an invaluable tool for lots of people interested in finding out about incidents like fires. In fire season, it is our main tool for finding out the current status of a whole bunch of different fires. We are talking about the High Cascades Complex with Mike Lindberry, who's the information officer there. Virginia Gibbons is a Chetco Bar Fire Information Officer here on the Jefferson Exchange. And Virginia, I want to ask you, I wonder if what the level of moisture is in some of the fuels that are burning, particularly on the western flank of the Chetco Bar Fire, and if there's enough moisture to be a factor in how much smoke that fire seems to be putting out.
We have had really pretty smoky and foggy conditions, actually, in the area, and so that's really hampered our ability to utilize our air resources that we do have on hand, and those air resources would be up as soon as they possibly can fly safely. But that has definitely been a factor in our firefighting effort in limiting our abilities. But we're doing everything that we can on the ground right now with our ground resources.
Well, speaking of air resources, I understand that, and it may not be on either of the fires that the two of you are in charge of keeping track of, but that drones are coming into greater use. Obviously, there are concerns about people in the public using drones getting in the way of the firefighting aircraft, but are drones being used at all on Chetco Bar, for example, Virginia, to just to get some reconnaissance on the fires?
Yes, actually the Forest Service has been using drones for some time to assess and monitor the Chetco Bar fire.
All right, and just to kind of get an idea of how big it is and where it is, that sort of thing?
Yes, yes, actually it's really helped us with some strategies about trying to decide where we could put some people over time. Because as I mentioned before, it's been very tricky business with the really rough terrain in there and our concern for firefighter safety.
Mike Linberry, how about the use of unmanned aerial vehicles in the High Cascades complex?
No, we haven't had the opportunity to use any of the unmanned aerial platforms on this fire. This fire is pretty low in the priority as far as fires in the northwest area. And so I think they're going to be deploying those resources on the high priority, like the Chetco Bar, for that information. You know, obviously information gives us this, the quicker that we can get it, it'll give us the ability to act more decisively and in more effective manners. So with more life and property in danger there, I think it's a perfect place to use them.
So, Mike, when your fire is not, as you point out, the highest priority, at this point, Chetco Bar is the highest priority fire in the country, do you sometimes ask for resources and get told, no, you can't have them?
It happens on fires, and then, we'll move those resources over to a place where, like I said, we do protect more life and property at risk, and other incidents sometimes do lose resources. And they have to adjust their tactics and adjust their strategy a bit until, it gets to a point where we can start bringing them back in. It does happen. Unfortunately, resources are limited, especially when we're having a fire season like we are here in the Northwest this year.
And I wonder, Mike, how much I understand that the darkening from the eclipse and the drop in temperatures, even if it was short in duration, did seem to have some effect on fires, I'm hearing. Was that a factor at the High Cascades complex?
You know, I couldn't tell you as far as that, that period where we did have the drop in temperature. It may have had a slight impact, but what I can tell you is it was temporary. We've seen some very interesting fire behavior. Some of our fires are moving during the day, but we've had a couple of fires that are moving primarily at night. We've seen some very low humidities overnight. I mean, talking into the single digits, and that is allowing, with a little bit of wind on it, some of these fires to move to the east. And then we're seeing those humidities come up. Obviously, from a physical aspect, preheating of the fuels by the sun will allow them to ignite quicker. So that brief period may have had some effect, but it wasn't a real, significant effect on our fuels.
That is highly unusual. Single-digit humidities, you're saying, at night?
Yes, yes. We've recorded humidities on the Broken Lookout fire overnight as low as 6 to 8%.
Wow, that is amazingingly low. And Virginia, we talked about some of the weather conditions you're dealing with there. I can't imagine humidity is one of those, but I could be wrong.
Well, we've actually, our humidities have spiked, up to 80 to 100% in the evening. So that's why we're sitting in a good place just momentarily and, taking advantage of that with our actions. And being as aggressive as we possibly can while we've got this open window. But that's going to quickly change here in the next day or so.
All right, you're talking about 0% containment now on a fire that was 92,000 acres at the last count?
About 98,000.
98,000, okay. And 0% containment. Is there any figure for when you'll be able to start getting into 1%, 5%, 10% on that fire?
That's kind of hard to say right now. We might be gaining a little bit during these 2 days, but I just don't have that information. It hasn't quite caught up with us yet.
Okay. And for the High Cascades complex, Mike Linberry, obviously you go fire by fire on there, but are you getting to some level of containment on particularly the Big E's, the Spruce Lake fire, and the Blanket Creek?
Yes, we've upped the containment over the last week or so on Spruce Lake and Blanket Creek. We're at 61% on Spruce Lake, and on Blanket Creek, we're at 76%. the Blanket Creek, with the increase in acreage, you know, we can expect that number to maybe go down a little bit, because now we have more fire line and we have a little more uncontained fire line. That will fluctuate a bit, but we did make some good progress over the last week, but it's been a little rough on that fire, particularly over the last 2 days.
We were talking earlier about the fire behavior. Virginia Gibbons, I want to get your take on fire behavior and any anomalies that have cropped up. I mean, obviously you're dealing with things that people in other places don't have to deal with, including the Chetco effect, that roaring of warm wind down the Chetco River Canyon. Anything else in fire behavior that has proven to be especially tricky in handling the Chetco Bar Fire?
Well, I'd just say the fact that we grew from, 5,000 acres to 98,000 acres in the course of about 6 days. Is significant, and as I mentioned before, that's due to the lining up of some things over time with that weather event that we had, that very hot period of weather that really dried out all the fuels, including the heavy fuels, and then that followed by the Chetco wind event really lined things up, and our inability to get close to there and get firefighters in there safely. The combination of those things, as well as once we get into fire season, having to compete for resources initially, and of course now we're number one and we've got them, but we have had challenges, continually since attempted to suppress this fire when it was first started, over the course, and continuing on up to today. There's been a myriad of challenges that way, and that associated with fire behavior and the inaccessible terrain.
All right. Lots of work still left to do, and danger still present around both sets of fires. Virginia Gibbons is an information officer at the Chetco Bar Fire. Mike Lindberry is an information officer at the High Cascades Complex. Thank you both for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
You're welcome. Good to be here. Thanks.